Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Deva Ojas. Before meeting Osho, Ojas studied theology and lived for 20 years as an ascetic Franciscan monk. Ojas took sannyas in 1977 and became a community member of Osho. In recent years, Ojas has been working as a publicist, tutor, coach and counselor. I'm so happy to have Ojas on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Ojas, welcome to the show. How are you?
Fine at the moment. Yeah, it is a crisis time, but it's okay. We learn to meditate, to be in loving space, so it is fine at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a long time ago. It was in 1970. It was a crisis for my life, actually. As you said before, I lived as a monk, but in the 70s, the Church became very traditional, orthodox. I could not stand it anymore. So I knew I don't have work there for my life anymore. So I got another job for the government for social cultural training. I was coordinator in the Netherlands. But still, I missed a lot of inspiration. I didn't know anymore where to go. A kind of uncertainty that a lot of people now have too. Like you drive a car, there is fog before you and there is fog behind you and you don't know what to do. And then, I talked with a friend and with other friends, and at a certain moment they told me in Amsterdam, in the Cosmos, you can go there for an active meditation. Now, I'm very active in my life. So I went in that evening to the Cosmos and in my blue tie and my things with me from the government. And I met there a lot of people around, so in very strange orange clothes. And they told me, yeah, soon there will be a meditation. And then I had the idea of a meditation like in a monastery. You sit silently, you go inside, go to up in the sky to meet the Lord. But this was totally different, I tell you. We just had a very small place. We went in, the door was closed, and then at a certain moment, the immense drums on the dynamic, pull, and I didn't know where I was, so I screamed, like to go out, bumped the door, but then they said to me, screaming, yeah, you are right, you understand, scream. So I went through the whole meditation, and suddenly there was this deep, deep, immense silence. And I was, for the first time, how to say that, witnessing what's happening. Without any thought, I could not think anymore. It was just beyond everything. But that beyond was inside, in my heart. So, and that was, for me, extremely amazing. Then the music started again. We were dancing. And I was so happy. I came out, didn't know what happened with me, but this was it. I don't know how to say it. I felt something inside me open instead of something up. And my whole body and energy field and everything was alive and kicking. So it was so totally different of all the meditations that I ever have experienced. So I went the next day to my work, but I could not work anymore. And then I had a friend and we said, okay, let us both do the meditation because she knew a little bit about it. And there I got contact with Osho and then I could not stop it anymore. So I had the feeling I have to find this guy because this is amazing for me. I'm always be a guy of reading books, writing articles and so. And now suddenly my whole body is available for I don't know what anymore. So then I told my boss that I like to go to India. And he told me, okay, what are you going to do there? I said, I don't know, but I have to meet somebody there. And he agreed. And then I met for the first time Osho in 28th of May. And I was immediately kept by him, took sannyas, and came back in my office in orange clothes with a mala and a new name. And yeah, because it didn't work well, actually my colleague said, okay, fine, yeah, good. So he didn't have very much frustration about this. But then in August, I had the feeling I have to stop my work and to go to Pune to meet, to be with Osho, to live there. And so I said to my colleagues that I would no make new contracts for the next year anymore, not more distant education, etc. But they were busy. I like to go to India. And then they were angry and they screamed to me, you are stupid that you do that and so. But then after a while, I could get good contact with them and could explain things. And they started talking about meditation and the troubles in life and the crisis in which we were in. So at the end of 77, I left the Netherlands. I left my job. I went with my girlfriend to Pune. And there I lived for 4 years in the ashram.
Okay, wonderful. And it's really fascinating to hear how, you know, you studied theology, you have been a monk for 20 years, and then you came to Osho through a direct experience of a meditation and dynamic meditation, which is, you know, one of the most powerful meditation ever being created. So it's great. And then when you went to live in Pune, obviously you had some meeting with Osho. He used to have these darshan meetings with people. And Osho used to advise people on doing some particular meditation, so therapy groups to help them in the spiritual growth. And in your case, he told you to just go and work in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So why is that, and was that helpful?
Yeah, you can imagine. I worked here, I had 4 secretaries and a lot of money. And then you suddenly come there in Pune. And the turning point was actually the meeting on the first darshan. So we came there and Osho asked me, what do you like to do? You can go for therapy or you can go for work. And then I said, I think, and he said, stop thinking. And it was so silent and it was so intriguing for me that I could not talk anymore. So he talked with my girlfriend. And then later he came to me and he said, Ojas, what do you like to do? And I said, well, I think, he said, stop thinking. And then everybody, of course, laughed. But then I said, you can laugh, but how to stop thinking? So then he looked at me and it was really beautiful, overwhelming look. And he said, go and help my people in the kitchen. And the next day I came in Vrindavan, it was really hell and heaven noise and all pots and pans. And Diksha came to me and gave me a job as dishwasher. And I did it 2 years. And in the first half of the year, I tried dishwashing without thinking. No thinking, no thought. Stop thinking. It was amazing job actually, dishwashing, and I could not do it. I could not help it. It was for me. And every morning we did the dynamic. And every time I longed for that being beyond thinking or stop thinking. And then on my birthday, that is just a few days ago, April, 6 April 1978, Diksha told me, Ojas, you have a present now. You can go to Bhagwan, it is his name, to Osho, because then you have a special darshan with him. And I said, okay. Then I tell him that I can't stop thinking. So I went to the darshan, sitting in front of Bhagwan Osho, and then I said, because he had the feeling, I don't say it now. Perhaps I need another half year. So I said to him, my energy is blocked. And then he looked at me and said, yeah, but I can hear you thinking. And then suddenly I screamed, yeah, and I can't stop thinking. And on that moment, Osho looked at me and he said, well, if you can't stop thinking, just play with your thoughts. And that happened suddenly. I could see my thoughts, I could see my body, I could see my emotions, everything was there, and I could play with it. And I was so blissed, I even could not leave the place where I was sitting in front of Osho. So they took me away. And for days, I was in a kind of immense happiness, joy, freedom, space, Because for the first time in my life, I could really see my source and play with it. And that I did in the weeks later. So it was a kind of totally transformation from being a thinker to being somebody who lives in his heart and can see what he's doing. And then after a while, a few weeks later, of course, so my thoughts came in, thought, wow, this is it. And so, and then I dropped it. But for my whole life, this was the turning point of me. So that whatever I do, I can go back in my heart, see my thoughts, feel my emotions, sit where I am, and then make new choices or whatever. So it was a kind of immense freedom that he has given me on that day.
Well, that's very significant. I think that's the gift of being in the presence of a master. It sounds like, you know, being with him, you had this great experience, which otherwise would be very difficult. And I think many people have the same trouble who can't stop thinking. Probably everyone in this planet, unless you're enlightened, you struggle more or less to some degree with the same. And I'm personally the same as you. I mean, my mind is particularly active, and you know, even though I meditated for many years, you know, I struggle to get into quiet moments. So what is the key, apart from that obviously experience in the presence of a master, what's the key and what would be your advice for people nowadays who don't have a chance to be with Osho?
Well, we are in a good moment, actually, because now the coronavirus is happening, and I'm sure when this is finished, in the next future there will be an economical crisis, there will be an climate crisis, so we have to do something to do together. And what I see is actually this morning I was brushing my teeth, and then I looked in a paper that I have next to my washing place. That is a text of Osho, and he is now exactly 50 years old. It was on the 9th of April, 1970. On that moment, a disciple asked Osho, can you give us some advices of actually the commandments? And Osho said, okay, I don't like to give commandments, but okay, I will give you a few. And the first is, don't obey a commandment that comes from without. Listen inside. But then I look suddenly to the last one, and the last one is interesting. He said, don't search. What is, stop and see. And I guess that is the advice for this moment too. We live in a crisis, and we continue to live in a crisis. What meditation is stop and see. It means just see what's going on. Just follow your heart and see how your thoughts are full of fear. I remember that from the last days too. And for me, it was amazing that Osho never told me that it is not good or bad to have fear. He said, just watch your fear. Look in the eyes of the devil, he said a few times. So don't run away from the fear, but look in it and see what it is for you. So the uncertainty at the moment that I feel, I cannot look a few weeks or a few months or a few years ahead. I try to write a booklet for my grandchildren to show them the future, but I cannot tell about the future, nor I can tell about the past, because the past seems to be gone. So there is a new situation, and it means on this moment, see what's going on and see how this crisis at the moment is giving a picture of humanity that I never have seen before. Like how we are connected all over the world, how our technology is meeting everybody with everybody, how other bad things are happening too, the control and the obsession to control. But there is another thing too, and it is connect with each other on level of meditation. I have now in Zoom sessions, we cannot go out of the house, but we meet each other and we sit silently and we watch our thoughts, and that gives so much rest, relaxation. And it is actually the motto for me at the moment, stop and see. When I read the newspapers, I see the news, I get my social media, the whole time I sit on my chair and then it comes again to me. Okay, stop and see. See what's going on inside of me. Because inside of me, there is the reaction. And it feels like I am a laboratorium, a lab, in which I now very carefully watch how my thoughts are, my ideas are. And I see them changing when I am in a very open mind, no judgment, no condemnation, just be who I am at the moment. And that accepting and no control over it. Let it be and let things go. And that gives a kind of very relaxed space in which I can be very creative during the day and make contact with the new way, actually, and make contact with people. And what I saw a few days ago, the masters, the spiritual teacher, had a whole evening and night talking all over the world about this point, meditation, going inside, watch yourself, actively witnessing what Osho always told us. And I am so happy with that, because I feel on this way we connect too. I have friends in Poland, I have friends in Latin America, and we meditate together. We do it together. We sit together and we know, okay, now we drop all our thoughts by watching it. Now we are connected in a kind of relaxed, silent space in which we see what control is and what the planet at the moment is doing with us. But where we can be very happy and joyful. And the joy of Osho, I feel at the moment. So, because we have an opportunity just by this lockdown, just by this bad, horrible situation. And I remember he always said, never see things or, but and. So if it is, as he says, thorns, if you look in the thorns, look as well at the flowers. If you look in the poison, as well, look in the nectar, because both are it. And I remember a book, a letter that Osho wrote, and that I used as a starting point for me after Rajneeshpuram to write a book on the whole situation. And that is actually a beautiful letter. And perhaps in our crisis now, it is good to hear the words of Osho. Perhaps it's good that I read this.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
It is letter 54, cup of tea. Love, I am one with all things, in beauty, in ugliness. For whatsoever is, there I am. Not only in virtue, but in sin too, I am a partner. For me, as an old monk, this is quite a breakthrough. But he is right. Shakespeare says the same. There is no good nor bad, but thinking makes it so. It is a wisdom that is so deep rooted in humanity, and Osho is part of that tradition. He says, for whatsoever is, there I am, not only in virtue, but in sin too, I am a partner, and not only heaven, but hell too is mine. Buddha, Jesus, Lao Tzu, it is easy to be there here, but Genghis, Timur, Hitler, they are also within me. No, not half. I am the whole of mankind. Whatsoever is man's is mine. Flowers and thorns. Darkness as well as light. And if nectar is mine, whose is poison? Nectar and poison, both are mine. And then he finishes this letter. Whoever experienced this, I call religious. For only the anguish of such experience can revolutionize life on earth. The anguish of the experience we have now, and looking in it, just without judgment, without condemnation, that is what can revolutionize life on earth. And my feeling is, that is the way where the new man or the new humanity is emerging. We can see glimpses of it now. A few nights ago, I was with so many people in this chaotic crisis, sitting silently, meditating, and suddenly somebody said, and the grass grows by its own. That feeling of letting go, of the things are happening as they are, accepting without resistance, gewoon trusting, that is the main point, actually. Trusting life that this crisis as well and the crisis to come will create a new world with a new humanity that can say, okay, we had ages ago the old man, he did the good things, but now we are the new man. And Osho was full of that idea that the new man was coming.
Yes, indeed, indeed. And then he mentioned many times that the times of crisis are the most ripe moments for this transformation to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the email exchange that we had before the interview, you wrote something that really caught my attention. You said that Osho is not an easy master, and I've heard that before. And I have my own personal experience with that, even though I haven't been physically in contact with him. But I'd love to hear you, if you can expand a little bit more, or if you can give some example of when you face the non-easy side of Osho.
Well, because he let us experience the crisis in Rashispuram. And at the same time, he gets the attention of the whole world to it. That's quite a crisis. And then in the full spotlights. And these are two aspects. I first like to talk about the aspect of the spotlights. Because Osho knew that humanity would become in an immense crisis. And what he did in his life was getting attention for his message. Now, it's not easy because everybody has his own agenda. But when you talk now about Osho or Bhagwan, then everybody still knows it. He is in the subconsciousness of a lot of people. And why? Because he had, how to say that, tricks, ways to get attention of crowds, of the mobs, of actually of the whole world. Here in Holland too. I was a lot of times on TV to explain what Osho did and so, because people were a bit frustrated about what he says, or angry, or whatever. So, and that was one of the things that is part of the message of Osho, that he is looking for publicity all over the world. And I remember that. Perhaps I can tell a little story. In the beginning, when I came in 77 to the ashram, there I had a lot of money, of course, because I worked for the government and I like to give that to the ashram. So I came to the office, and this was Lakshmi was sitting, and Sheila and Arup, and said, here's the money. And they said, no, no, no. You have to keep a little bit for your own. Let me say now about 7,000-8,000 euro. Then it was 15,000 gulden. I said, okay, I keep it. But then a few weeks later, 6 weeks later, they came to me and said, you have to come to the office. And then in the office, there was a problem, they said, yeah, because there was not enough money for the ashram, and perhaps the bankruptcy was threatening. So if I could give this 7,000 euro, I said, phew, quite something. And there was somebody else, look, a French guy who was selling toilets in India with money. And so okay, I said, okay, if you need it, you can get it. So I give my 7,000, and he gives some money, and perhaps somebody else too. So I went out of the office and said, wow, wow, now, empty-handed. And then, a few days later already, a week later, suddenly Osho came in Mercedes from his Lao Tzu house to the Buddha Hall. And I remember I was so angry because I said, that is my money. My money goes there. Why? She said, okay, not only I was angry, but in India they were angry. It came suddenly in all the newspapers, even in the Financial Indian Times. And it was written that it was a scandal that a master just for 100 meters needs a Mercedes car. So they were really, really angry. I left to write Osho, and I was totally in a mess, actually. And then a few weeks later, I was called to the office, and there again, happily sitting, were Lakshmi and Sheila and Arup. And they said, oh, Jas, here you have back the money. I said, what? And he said, yeah, you know, after all these scandals in the newspapers, they suddenly came from the bank and they said, yes, madam, we heard you had credit problems, but now the credit problems are over, we heard, because you are a good money. So if you like to have credit, then you can get it. And within a few days, they had a lot of credit again. Then afterwards, Osho gave a speech and he said, yeah, for 20 years, I'm going in the country, running everywhere with a train, teaching the core of the old tradition in a new way. No newspapers were interested in it. But now, when I go with a car, a Mercedes car, everybody is stumbling over me. Stupid mob, that's what I can remember. And later in the Rashinspuram, when I was there, I worked there for a time in the truck farm. Every day we went for an afternoon session with Osho. He came in one of his Rolls Royces. And especially these Rolls Royces, they are just the way in which he attracted the attention from the people. And I remember I once asked Osho in a question, why are you doing this publicity? I know that the world has to be awakened, but this is quite a trouble for us too, because people in Pune, they know that you get this all these strange things to get attention. And then Osho, he laughed a little bit so. And then he said, well, I can tell you a story of Mullah Nasruddin. He came to me because his donkey was sick and he has to go to a veterinarian. And he had to pay 10 rupees. And Osho said, yeah, 10 rupees, that's not so much. No, said Mullah to Osho. But then he took a stick, bumped with a stick on the head of the donkey. And then he asked 10 rupees more. And Osho said, and why? And then Mullah said, yeah, the veterinarian said, the first 10 rupees was just to get his attention. But now, when I have his attention, I have to give him a healing. And that was actually the way where Osho lived. He took attention and then he got the message. Like he did with me and with thousands and thousands of people. He took attention and then he gave a very simple message, witness, stop and see. Look what's happening inside you. And then do it with your heart. It will open, you are free, and you can go and spread your message with love and care all over the world. And let the people see that it is not a dumb thing. It is just something beautiful. So be happy. Laugh, sing, dance, celebrate life instead of what the old religions did. That was for me the message, actually.
Well, that's wonderful. Thanks for sharing these stories with us. It's very insightful, you know, to understand Osho from the inside, because, you know, many times people just look at the outside and they don't know the real motive behind. And obviously, you know, we have been talking about this many times during the podcast, but this story, I think it's even more meaningful. So yeah, that's great, and I'm pleased that you got your money back.
that's not much, but it was enough. Yeah
Okay, so I guess after Osho left the body, I understand that you can't got into mentoring and coaching and counseling. And obviously, you know, you have studied theology and you've been meditating for many, many years. You're living with Osho. You had a previous experience professionally in a government position. So, you know, you're clearly very eloquent. So how do you transmit Osho's message to the younger people or newer generations?
Well, I did it a lot of times on TV, national TV. I don't know, when you are in the files, then they have a question. And like a few years ago, I was giving somewhere in The Hague, in the center, and then I got a phone call. And they told me, yeah, we are from a show tonight on television. And we have a question because Lady Gaga from Hollywood has said in an interview that she loved Osho and especially his book about rebellion, inner rebellion. So can you explain on the TV how it can happen that Lady Gaga from Hollywood just reads a book of a spiritual master from India? So yeah, then they gave me an opportunity to talk about it. And yeah, that happened a lot of times. So like last year, with this Wild Wild Country movie, you remember, the range. Of course, by Netflix, it became a hype in the Netherlands. And even so, that they asked me and Sugit and Abhilasha to come to the television in a night evening talk show to tell about it. So we got an opportunity again to explain to, because it was a lot of people were listening them, to the people that it is actually very simple. Go inside, stop and see. And especially in the crisis of Rajneeshpuram, where now Sheila has made a movie about, just the crisis helps us because there is nothing to hold on the outside world. So you have to go inside. And we could explain that. And later we heard that a lot of people have seen that night show, talk show, and that they phoned to the centers in the Netherlands. Can we do the dynamic meditation or the Aum from the university? Because we heard it is so good that you express your feelings and let go of it so that you are free to watch what you do inside. So the weeks later, in the centers, there was a lot of more people coming to experience the dynamic meditation and the Aum. So we live in a world where the technique, especially the social media and the television now in the last weeks, but Netflix, connect each other, with each other. And that's at the moment the way we do it. I am in a Zoom session, Zoom, Z-O-O-M, with a lot of people to meditate every evening now from 7:30 to 8, just before the news. And the group where we're doing it is growing at the moment. So because Zoom is easy, you can go to 1,000 people, to 2,000 people. And I see with all the information that we get and the uncertainty and the crisis, more and more people are interested now in it. And I told you in the beginning, I just come out of a revalidation center because my knee, I had a fracture on my knee. But in that revalidation center, I did every possible way to get inside of myself if needed. There I talked with the medical doctor, and they understand at the moment that meditation is helping for people to relax, to let go of things, to trust life, to come in an attitude of non-judgment, of being with what is. And they were very happy, actually. And I talked a few times with the medical doctors about it, and with the nurses. And then I see that a lot of nurses and doctors and people with whom I was know about it, interested about it. And there was even an evening that a few people asked about my name. It was Ojas, a strange name. And I could tell about Bhagwan. Now, they have memories of Bhagwan, like Rolls Royces and all kinds of things. But then I could tell about meditation and how it helps for me in all the pain. And that was one of the things that I got from Bhagwan, from Osho. Perhaps I can tell this. I had immense pain in my stomach and in my knees because it was broken and I could not manage it anymore. And then I suddenly did a meditation, and I remember suddenly Osho talking to us in the Buddha Hall. It must have been in 78. I was sitting in the Buddha Hall, and Osho was giving his morning lecture. And then suddenly I got an immense toothache in my right side. And I thought to myself, oh, wait, toothache. And just we heard yesterday that everybody who leaves the Buddha Hall now cannot come back within 3 months. Well, that was a thought. I was suddenly afraid. I said, oh, Jesus, when this pain goes on, Jay, I cannot sit here anymore. I have to go. Okay. On that moment, Asher was talking, and he makes a difference between pain and suffering. And then, by accident or whatever, you don't know, Asher, he said, yeah, guess you have toothache. Then immediately all the thoughts come. Why me? Why not somebody else? And it is horrible. And I cannot manage it. I said, okay, that is thoughts. That is your mind. But the pain, watch your thought, witness your thoughts, and go just where you cannot go further anymore. So I watching my thoughts, sitting in the Buddha hall, and more I came to that physical pain. And then Osho said, this physical pain cannot go away. You can watch it. And I went to that physical pain, and I suddenly I discovered the pain is there, but it is not my pain anymore. It is as if I was going in a kind of free space outside, watching my pain. That was for me in Pune an immense experience. You can make a difference between your thoughts, your emotions, your feelings, but then the pain is still there, but you can go even further, further and further, and say, okay, not my pain anymore. I am. Let me say it like this. Well, that experience came back now just a few months ago when I was in the rehabilitation and sitting there with all my pain. I was meditating, and I suddenly it is not mine anymore. And that is a relief I cannot explain. It is bizarre too, because you see the pain, but the pain is not yours anymore. But that is what Osho teaches people. Disconnect with your psychic being. Be in your body. Enjoy your body. Because everything that you experience in the body is going away and away and away. But you cannot catch it anymore. But in that space, you can go very deep inside. To the place where you are. But you are. Who you are. And that is actually the main question for all of us. Who I am. Who am I? Tell me. And the only thing that Osho says always is, nobody can tell, you have to experience it yourself. And perhaps, and that's my experience in life, in crisis, in deep crisis, in pain, I am very near to the door where I can go in to know who I really am.
And I think this is a real great example, again, of how important is the presence of a master who can help us go through that, because I personally tried this technique. I heard Osho speaking about that. And, when there is physical pain, it probably took me really few seconds, and then the pain overtook and the experiment didn't go that far. And, it's tough. It's hard. But when you are in a community and you are in the presence of a master, that's one of the gifts. You still have to do it yourself, but you have a great help and support. So it's great that you had that, and it stays with you in your life. And I hope, one day I manage to do it.
but there is a difference between the 70s and now. And the difference is when I talked in the government with my colleagues about meditation, they were laughing. It was bullshit. When I talk now and when I experience with people meditation, it is part of, let me say, well-being. It is not part of churches or religion. It's part of well-being. It's part of relaxing. It's part of how to cope with situations. And that is what I see now in this crisis too, that more and more people are interested in all types of meditation. It is Vipassana, it is mindfulness, it is Osho meditations, it is everything. There is now a collective crisis, and I'm sure that they will do everything with scientific research and this control and this all kind of publicity and this governments who like to control other people and surveillance and so on. They will do everything to control this demon, the virus. But at the same time, the virus is calling us for meditation too. And the last weeks, I've been so happy to experience that more and more people start understanding that the mind cannot solve the problems anymore in which we are. Nor, as the populist try to say, the emotional expressions, the just being angry on each other and making and condemn other and so. No, that will not solve the problems anymore. The only way to solve the problems is going inside, like Osho said, meditation and love, two wings of the birds. And at the moment in the crisis, I guess the new man is recreating itself from inside as being a bird with two wings, meditation and love. And this new man is growing at the moment, is flowing. And it's a collective, it is not an individual anymore. It is a collective happening at the moment that I can see. And because perhaps this crisis will be forgotten in half a year or I don't know what, but a few things will stay. And then we are in another crisis. We are in the future now of ongoing crisis from economy and especially the climate crisis who's coming. We need this connectedness that we have now. And in that connectedness, the seeds of meditation and love are at the moment growing. That's what I can see. And it is because I have social media and I do things. It is a bit virtual, but the happening is in all of us. And we can deny it and we can say, no, it's bullshit. But now a lot of people don't say it is bullshit anymore. They say, wow, can you tell me about it? I was in the hospital after 2 days and the lady came to me and said, Mr. Ojas, we like to invite you for a meeting. We have courses here. You can paint, you can sing, etc. And soon we have a meeting. Perhaps I can invite you at 11 o'clock because then you can meet the pastor and talk about the problems that you have. And then I said her, a pastor? I don't need a pastor. And then she said, why not? She said, well, I meditate. I am my own pastor. And then she looked at me. And instead of laughing, she said, are you meditating? What kind of meditation are you doing? Well, I said, I first express my feelings in my room. I can do that. And then I become silent and I watch what she said. Oh, interesting, she said, interesting. Can I talk with you tomorrow? Because, I do mindfulness, but it's a bit mad. Can we talk together? So the next day we were talking, and it was really amazing how she could understand what was 50 years ago perhaps bullshit, but now she could understand it. And so I had different personal meetings too in that hospital. And now I see that it is worldwide because we can have all kinds of solutions for crisis, but finally we come to the point that we only can be a bird with two wings, and it is meditation and love. And that love is coming too. There's a lot of solidarity at the moment, new ways of contacting with each other, trying to help each other. It's much more than half a year ago when it was very stressed and individualistic here in Amsterdam. Now people in the neighborhood do things for each other. It is amazing. This love is coming and meditation is booming.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's beautiful that in times of crisis, people get together. It's the positive things of negative time, if you like. So I am aware that you recently wrote an e-book about your life with Osho. Was it useful for you to reflect on your life experience with Osho? And did you get any new insights whilst you were recollecting your memories?
Yeah, what I saw again, how right Osho was that the new man is coming and that there is no choice. Or we destroy ourselves as a human being, or we become a new man. And when I was writing the book and going to this expressions of Osho about the new man, I saw in the 70s and the 80s, he was so full aware of the new man, and he was so feeling his vocation, to say it, I don't know how to say it, to tell that to the whole world that he risked everything. And that's what I experienced when I was writing the book. Osho was risking everything, and now we have to risk everything to live totally. And everybody in Pune and in Rashispuram was not willing to do that, but the way he was doing it was that at a certain moment, everybody was risking. Sheila, I knew her very well, was risking everything too. A lot of people that I saw in the podcast, because last week, because I was reading them, I remember them. We all have gone through that crisis period in our life where we started blooming. That's what I had a lot of details, of course, and experiences, but that came out. And this morning, I told you, it came out to me that, in short, stop and see. And we have now the possibility in this crisis to stop, to reflect, to go beyond reflection, and to see what's going on. And seeing, really seeing in freedom, gives the possibility for new choices, for fresh choices. Because some people say life repeats itself. I don't see it. I see, for me, every moment is new. And Osho said it a lot of times, if you make love, do it as if you do it for the last time, but do it as well and do it as if you do it as for the first time. And so this moment, for me, it is and the first time and the last time.
And that's a beautiful message. And we always kind of, we often forget that Osho risked everything, as you said. And in fact, he risked his own life and he lost his own life to carry on his message. And that's something that, you know, some people forget and they only think about Rolls-Royce, etc. But
there's a hit on the donkey.
Yeah, exactly. So, so Ojas, I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Very simple. I have a very disciplined life because I'm now 83, and when I am not disciplined, then so we stand up at 8 o'clock. Then and before, sometimes I'm awake. Then I do meditation between 7 and 8. At 8, we stand up. We do morning exercises, gymnastics. We have lunch. And then in the mornings, I do my emails and things to write. Then it is lunchtime. And afterwards, now with my feet, I go outside in the park. I start drawing, doing things. So we have dinner time. In the evenings, I watch the news. And then I go in bed every day.
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
At the moment, it is Vipassana. I learned that in India before I met Osho, because with my leg, it is very difficult to jump and to scream in the house too. And because in Osho and Vipassana, they are really good connected, because in Vipassana is the core of Osho's message too. And a few days ago, a friend for my birthday sent me a lecture of Osho about Vipassana. And that's actually my favorite meditation. So in the evenings, I do Vipassana meditation with a lot of friends, sannyasins too. And in the mornings, I do Vipassana before I do the morning meditation. And then during the day, it is a kind of habit to watch myself and to see what's happening. And to be in that freedom of Vipassana, where there is no judgment and just, I wrote in a diary about my sickness last month. When there is no goal, then there is an immense possibility for freedom and for love.
Wonderful. Okay, so the last question is, you live the Osho experiment. You are one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
I close my eyes and then he's there. I have my room is full of pictures of Osho. He is my master, my friend, my door to freedom, my morning glory. I don't know how to say it. I meet him in. Sometimes I see flowers and I understand flowers and I remember Osho. I see the sky and I see the open sky. There's the clouds and I hear Osho saying. The way of the white cloud. You are just a cloud. You, at a certain moment, you are gone and you are opened up in the empty sky. I hear him every day. I hear him. These words of him, these morning meditations there in Pune, they have such a deep rooted place in my body. It's the soil on which I plant every day the seeds of the day.
So I think with this image of Osho as a flower, as white clouds and blue sky, we can end this wonderful interview. I really thank you so much for taking the time to share your experience with us.
It was a pleasure.
It was my pleasure. So I'll send you lots of love and a big hug.
Okay. Big hug to Chetna.
And to you and your beloved. Bye-bye. Okay.
I will do. Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Love of Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveofshow.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.